This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Our show tonight takes its cue from the Black Flag campaign over the weekend to talk about protests in Malaysia.
First, we'll be looking at why it's challenging and important for the people to be able to express concerns and demands right now. Then, we look at how online spaces enter the picture. And finally, the history of protests in Malaysia.
So, do you think protests are important? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07, and essentially, we are going to be starting by looking at the Black Flag campaign. So this was an online protest, essentially, because, well, we're not exactly hitting the streets. So it was a protest against the government where the public waves black flags or posts these black flags on social media. It kicked off on Saturday at 3 o'clock. And as mentioned, and you know, as is suggested by the name, people would join by putting up black flags at their homes, businesses, on the street, uploading photos of it on social media. You may not have seen black flags, but I'm sure you would have seen a lot of black fabric because people were also using things like T-shirts, their laundry, some people getting creative with garbage bags, photos of their pets with black fur, things like that.
So this was essentially started by a coalition of youth groups called Secretariat Solidarity Rakyat, or SSR. And along with this campaign, the hashtags, hashtag Lawan and hashtag Bendera Hitam, really started trending over the weekend. The protest itself encompasses three demands. So just running down that list, first, for the immediate resignation of Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin. Second, for Parliament to reconvene immediately. And third, for the state of emergency to end. And according to SSR, the black flag is meant to be, and I'm quoting here, a message to the government that the people are sick and tired of the uncertain solutions for the people and the country's problems. Unfortunately, even before this had started to kick off, There was already talk of the police investigating the campaign for allegedly containing seditious elements. And as of now, they're being investigated under the Sedition Act, Section 505C of the Penal Code, as well as Section 233 of the Communications and Multimedia Act.
Yeah, and that's, I think, I don't know, again, one of these reactions that we're seeing recently, right? Along with others that seem to have a focus of sorts on curtailing freedom of speech, freedom of expression. But if we look at the Black Flag campaign itself, I think what I found most striking about it is the fact that most of the time when you have things going on online, when you have protests happening online, there are concurrent on-the-ground elements that go along with it. And this is somewhat unique in the sense that that was not possible. You know, we are not allowed to gather. We are not allowed even in some cases to be, there's no reason for us to be outside. You shouldn't be outside, things like that. So essentially it meant that it was something that was happening wholly in the online space. And I think for those of us who would have seen a lot of hashtag Lawan on our social media, that was quite moving. I also wondered, however, how much on-the-ground impact it had for people who may not have been aware of it, who may not have participated in it or known of the hashtags even.
Which is the general gap or the issue with movements that are online led, right? I have to admit that over the weekend, I had some older people in my family sort of asking in the family WhatsApp chat groups, oh, what's happening? Because they'd heard about Bendera Putih, for instance, because I think it was a lot more community led and perhaps just a lot more common. Whereas Bendera Hitam, they weren't sure. They hadn't heard of the demands, for instance. But that said, I think the fact that we are at this time that we are now, we're not allowed to gather, we're not allowed to go out. perhaps it was inevitable that this is where it would start. And there was a physical manifestation of it, all the pictures of people taking pictures of their respective flags or black fabrics or black cats or whatever it may be, and posting it online. But yes, you're right that this was more than I think almost any of our previous protests, almost entirely an online-led protest.
And I'm also curious as to whether or not the leaders were paying attention, because really that's who the protest was directed at, right? So this is what we're going to be exploring after this. We just want to look at the impact of the movement, but also why it's important, right, for us to be able to express ourselves in a time where we're being told to stay home, where we are, in some ways, our freedom of movement and the like has been curtailed. So let us know what you think. Do you think that protests are important? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we are going to be joined by Victor, who is the chairman of Missi Solidarity, one of the organizations that actually kickstarted the movement, and Iskandar Fariz, communications director at REFSA. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:14 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Shamila. Today we are talking about essentially protests in Malaysia. This is hot on the heels of the Black Flag campaign that happened over the weekend. So we want to know, do you think protests are important? Let us know. Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now, we have Victor, who is the chairman of Missi Solidarity, one of the organizations that kickstarted the Black Flag movement, as well as Iskandar Fariz, communications director at REFSA. Victor, Iskandar, thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Chuilin.
Thank you for having us on.
Victor, let's start with you. Could you talk to us about the Black Flag campaign itself and what pushed the team to get it going?
As y'all may or may not know, the SSR, the Secretariat Solidarity Rakyat, organized Buka Puasa Buka Parlimen on April 30th earlier this year. And the SSR said then that they will return. So this is just the SSR making good on that promise. And since April 30th, we've seen even more of this administration's inability to deal with the pandemic and the fallout from this pandemic. And that this kerajaan is more self-serving than serving public interests. So in regards to why the SSR got involved, it goes without saying that someone had to stand up against it. Yeah.
And perhaps, Iskandar, you could talk to us about why you think it resonated with people.
So for this recent protest, I think it's a manifestation of people's frustration at the unresponsive government. To them, the government is perceived as being detached from the ground, from the concerns on the ground. We've been in this pandemic since last year. We've been in lockdown since March last year. So it's more than 1 year and a half of lockdowns. And it seems the government has been repeating itself either through mistakes that have been done in the past that they keep continuing making every now and then, and that there's no sense of learning or trying to improve themselves. So this is a channel for the rakyat, for the people, to direct their anger or frustration at the people in power. Because there are no other avenues that they can go to. There's no parliament that they can walk to. The streets can't be used as a protest mechanism anymore because of COVID. It'll be quite difficult to do an SOP-enabled abiding protest that caters for hundreds and thousands of people. But through online, they managed to find a voice, a channel, that even up to, I think, 200,000 of... I think mentions of the tweet occurred during the weekend.
Victor, what was the outcome of the weekend's campaign and how do you think it reflects on public sentiment right now?
First of all, I'd like to say that I wholeheartedly echo what Iskandar said. And as regards to the outcome of what happened on Saturday, like Iskandar pointed out, we reached 200,000 tweets or mentions on Twitter on Saturday night, which, as some have pointed out, I've seen, is the highest ever achieved for an online protest in Malaysia. So that's got to say something. This is undeniable proof that this Kerajaan has failed the rakyat. And I don't think anyone can accuse that mobilization like this online can be manufactured. It is natural. And I would also like to add that, like, hashtag Lawan is not a message created by the Secretary of Solidarity Rakyat. It is a megaphone to amplify feelings and sentiments that the Rakyat has already said countless times since Kerajaan Gagal was first trended all those months ago. The public sentiment is against this Kerajaan. The public sentiment wants change and they want something now. Like Iskandar said, the Kerajaan has been just doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I'm sure you all know the old adage about insanity, and the public is sick and done with it.
Iskandar, would you agree with that assessment of how members of the public feel about the government?
Yes, I concur. Hashtag Lawan, Bendera Hitam, and what we saw over the weekend wasn't a one-time thing. It's a culmination of multiple protests that took place over weeks, maybe months. So I could say it exacerbated as we see more livelihoods and lives being destroyed, not just by the pandemic, but also by the responses and actions by the government itself. It's an extension of the Kerajaan Gagal movement and other iterations of the hashtag that I don't think I can mention because it's too vulgar for the national radio. Certain actions like, for example, the 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. working operating hours that can only exacerbate the transmission of virus. These are some of the examples. And also the closing of sectors, selected sectors like printing, computer and technology, where we have other segments of society doing exercises like working from home, learning from home. They need printers. They need computer shops to repair their devices. So this kind of not thinking through of implementation will inevitably hurt the population. So there are no other venue to vent, any platform to vent out their frustration, but online. So we are seeing this as a culmination of many protests, mini protests that led up to this huge impact last weekend. It's like you clearly pointed it out, Chuilin and Shamila, it's not just an online protest. It has transcended into the physical space where we see flags are being hanged, even other products, other items that resembles a flag with the color black were hanged throughout the weekend.
Victor, I just wanted to point out, you know, some of the criticism that's been leveled at the movement, which is that these demands, for instance, may further destabilize the country. How would you respond to those?
As opposed to the current Kerajaan, between the slow vaccine rollout, miserable financial support, abuse of power, politicians flouting SOPs and getting off scot-free, it's practically a given that this nation's woes throughout this pandemic and the real source of destabilization since March last year, Sheraton move, has been this Kerajaan. The Black Flag movement last Saturday and over these coming weeks, hopefully, is the culmination of the Rakyat's anger towards this Kerajaan. The Rakyat, like Iskandar pointed out, is well aware that this government is at fault for most of the woes this country is going through, that this government is at fault for the instability that we currently experience. And they know that things can be a lot better. I mean, we see in other parts of the world, after all. The Rakyat is aware that this government is more concerned with staying in power and looking after themselves than they are with actual governance and public service. The Black Flag's demands, I would say in response to criticisms, are not a source of destabilization. They are the Rakyat's answer to it.
Iskandar, I want to know, how do movements like these filter upwards towards our leadership? Basically, you know, is any notice being taken?
So for a specific answer, I guess you'd like to check with the ministers, but a more general answer would be that demonstration and pressure groups are part and parcel of democracy. I would say it's a systemic feature of democracy because there are no true indicators of support for any particular government at a given time. You can have polls, you can have other surveys, but it wouldn't be a true exact indicator of a support for the current government. So the loudest and coherent voices out there will be noticed by decision makers. We've seen this before with other pressure groups, more race-based, racially inclined pressure groups back in Pakatan Harapan government. Now we are seeing more socially driven pressure groups in the form of this movement that we have seen, and also other different kind of movement platform led by young concerned citizens. It's not politically led, it's civically led. So in a digital age today, I don't think any government can curtail expression. They might not report the whole story in mainstream media, but we have other channels at our disposal right now for the rakyat to see what's happening. So if we don't see it in the mainstream media, we can see it in the social media or in the digital media. So I hope the government at least do something about it, because if not, the anger will just keep growing, and I think we will see a larger sort of protest in the coming weeks.
Victor, what's next for the movement?
What's next for the movement? I guess I would like to, for the Secretary of Solidarity Rakyat, we have already said that we will come back with more in our last statement. And I don't think I can disclose anything yet, unfortunately, but I can give with absolute certainty that Secretary of Solidarity Rakyat will return, and we hope to see the Rakyat mobilize with us. Yeah. I hope you understand I can't disclose.
And Iskandar, I guess just in closing for today, what part do movements like these play in a healthy democracy?
So movements like this help to direct the agenda of the day. So for a democracy, there'll be diverse kind of opinions and agendas competing for attention by the current for the current government's attention. So this is one of them. We will likely see many pressure groups in across different sectors putting out their demands for the current government, as they also want to be heard across weeks to come. So I think I just leave with a short note about how the upcoming parliament session might be a platform where these various groups would like to engage with the current government. So appropriate measures by the current government for the following challenges need to be put as an agenda for the parliament. Firstly, we need to work together to prevent the collapse of the national healthcare system. So we are talking about not only manpower. The public hospitals are drained and are strained by resources like ICU beds, capacity for holding patients. So the government itself need to think on how to rope in the private sector to help with these kind of challenges. The other one is, the number two is enabling people to return back to work so that they can earn a living. So this can be done through pandemic-proofing measures such as cultivate the culture of testing. So if the government can impose measures to make self-testing mandatory, make it cheaper to test, so you don't have to lock everything down, you can enable bit by bit, sector by sector, to go to work by testing periodically, maybe like once a week or twice a week. And also, reopening shouldn't be just essential versus non-essential. It should be based on risk transmission. So that even places like the factories, where although it's essential, but it can lead to many cases, that can be addressed. And then the lastly is about economic support for the vulnerable. We need to ensure that they survive until they can return to make a living. Food baskets only are not enough, because it can lead to inefficient allocation of resources. Imagine the backlog of food distribution if you have many bags of rice and people can get duplication of rice, sugar, and other perishables. So more sustainable to give a periodic transfer of cash and aids or the equivalent manner to families that need help. So hopefully the government can set this agenda in the upcoming parliament so that there is enough, and also there's enough room for discourse for various MPs to question and argue so that everything is decided in a transparent manner. So that, I think, is missing from the current discourse, and the rakyat is frustrated. They need to vent out. This protest is one of the outlets for them to vent out.
Iskandar, Victor, thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Shireen. Thank you, Shamila.
That was Iskandar Fariz, Communications Director at REFSA, as well as Victor, Chairman of Misi Solidarity, speaking to us about the Black Flag campaign that happened over the weekend. Now, after the 6:30 news, we are going to be talking about the importance of this happening online, the significance of online protests. So in the meantime, let us know, do you think protests are important? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Build Fairer Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It's coming along to 6:37 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. Today, we are taking a look at the Black Flag campaign that took place over the weekend, specifically on Saturday, and using that as a jumping off point to talk about protests in Malaysia. So in case you weren't familiar or you didn't see it happening, the Black Flag campaign was a protest against the government, which involved the public posting up black flags or black items, which it was more than not, on social media. And using the hashtags Lawan and Bendera Hitam. And there were three demands that were focused on: for the resignation, the immediate resignation of the Prime Minister, for Parliament to convene immediately, for the ending of the state of emergency. So we spoke earlier on about the importance of being able to express concerns, demands and the like, especially when our avenues for doing so are somewhat limited. We are just about to move on to talking about online protests in general, but we also want to know, what do you think? Are protests important? What do you make of Bendera Hitam? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have this message from Hazika.
So Hazika says, on the issue of the Black Flag protest, I wasn't aware of it until a friend informed me about it at about 6 p.m. on Saturday, 3 hours after it had started. I'm not on Twitter, Facebook or Instagram, but I do keep up with the news with online news portals and radio. I support the sentiment behind the Black Flag campaign, but outreach-wise, I think it could be improved. You know, Hazika, this is something that, I mean, we were talking about it a little bit earlier, but it is something that we often hear being expressed about any movement that start online, right? That they tend to be confined to a particular group of people. And I guess now, with even less ways to reach out to people beyond the digital divide, I'm not surprised, because I also know many people who didn't hear about it.
So you might not have heard about it. The other thing is, even if you saw it and if you had no context, you might not click the hashtag. Because that's the other thing, isn't it? That if you hadn't heard, or if it hadn't been contextualized for you, and somebody puts up a photo of a cat, hashtag Lawan, it's a little bit difficult to then make the logical leap. And I'm not criticizing photos of cats, by the way. By all means, always welcome. But just to say that I think that when things happen online, that this is what you run the risk of, right? But at the same time, the online space also, of course, gives you a lot of freedom to do these things. And so it is kind of that push and pull that we want to discuss next. But let us know, what did you make of the Black Flag campaign? Do you think protests are important? You can call 7733 2900 to weigh in. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now, to somewhat situate, I suppose, online protests in the larger landscape of things, we're crossing over to Jahaba Sadiq, founder of the Malaysian Insight. Jahaba, as always, pleasure to have you on with us.
Thank you very much for calling me up.
So what are your thoughts on the campaign, the Black Flag campaign, and the reaction that it received over the weekend?
Well, I was actually quite surprised that the campaign came about last weekend, really, because I think we were still going through the after effects of the White Flag campaign. And of course, scenes of people being treated on hospital floors and all that. So I think it got lost a bit in that shuffle of the outrage over people who are so poor and are hungry that no one is taking care of them, and the fact that our emergency wards and our ICU units are just swamped with a lot of COVID-19 patients. And I guess that's why a lot of people missed it. I didn't quite miss it, actually. I saw it, and I was a bit intrigued that why were there two colors, and then I called up a few friends and made the connection that it was actually in the run-up to a physical event on Saturday that a whole bunch of people were going to dress up in black and go to all the palaces around the country and also Dataran Merdeka to make the three demands that you mentioned just now.
So actually, that brings us to the next question that I wanted to ask, which is that because of the pandemic, so many public spaces are inaccessible to us. Does that perhaps heighten the place or the meaning that social media has to the rakyat right now?
To some extent, yes. But you also got to understand that there's a fragmentation of spaces online. You know, a lot of us are just focused on, say, for example, Facebook, Instagram, and maybe Twitter. But, you know, a lot of protests is going on in TikTok, for example. And there are a lot of clubhouse where they discuss these issues and all kinds of spaces. I mean, there's a thing called spaces on Twitter too, right? So our problem really is that there's way too many social media apps out there, and all of us, or most of us, are not connected to all of it. So we might miss things that happen on certain media spaces, but these are the ones where a lot more younger people, I think, are very active, and so they express their views there, whether it's through visuals or through music or through, you know, really long monologues that sap my energy at times too.
So we are seeing, of course, an increasing amount of protests, an increasing amount of opinions being shared in the online space. Again, perhaps more so with us being stuck at home. I'm going to ask you, I think, a rather simplistic question, but an important one. What do you think are the pros and cons in general of social media protests?
I think it's great, really, because, you know, social media has been used for years to organize things, to collaborate, and then they take it offline and do something physical about it. But because of this pandemic and because of the varying degrees of lockdowns across the country, everything happens in that space. And if you analyze it at a very granular level, I think part of it is because a lot of people do not see that kind of commitment or activism among politicians, especially senior politicians. And I thought politicians have taken to social media over the years, have been active politically for 30 years at least, right? So you get a lot of people going online for this. And it's great because it tells you that people are getting politically educated in some ways. They might not get the full picture, but they're getting some education. The cons is, of course, that it just remains a talking point, that it's not actionable, that people do not, make it something even more concrete than just talking about it or just creating graphics about it or having a song and dance about it. I think a good thing about what happened over the weekend is I myself was surprised to see that a lot of people actually on the ground, and I'm talking about all areas, whether it's the B40 area, whether it's the middle class area, or the T20 years, there were a fair number of people who were putting up black flags, right? I mean, so it became actionable. And I think it is a form of silent protest that's going on in the country. We'll never know how good it is because we are stuck at home and we can only see things through our handphone mainly. And a lot of people are too shy to put it up or do not want to get in trouble for putting it up. And so they quietly put it up somewhere, whether it's at their balcony if they have one, or you know, or show their cat or garbage bag. I think some of them were doing that, right? But I think there is not really many cons to it because it just shows you the level of consciousness in the country. I could be wrong in the sense that maybe it's just within the bubbles that I am in the circles I'm in, but I'm seeing a lot of it in a lot of other places, you know. I try to sort of go through all the social media apps because there's really nothing much else to do right now, right, apart from staying at home and trying to be safe.
So speaking of those bubbles, one of the most common criticisms of politics being discussed online is that the sort of algorithms that we're all subject to actually lead us to being basically further and further in our own bubbles and out of touch with what people on the ground might actually be feeling. How can these sorts of movements and conversations account for this?
I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of people who criticize that will always say, you know, well, they write things because they're not part of the action. For a journalist like me, I go to a lot of different apps and groups, and I see and observe that it's actually beyond what we think. It's within our circles and algorithms. It's cut across a lot of demographics, you by age or by race or by communities, for example, whether it is in Peninsula or whether it's in Sabah and Sarawak. You need to spend a lot of time, I think, to figure out that it's actually bigger than you think it is. I mean, for example, preparing for this little chat with you guys, I actually did a check and, you know, we've had 5 bursaries before the government changed, right? So these things take time, you know, and the bursaries actually started with a little known protest on November 25th, 2007, when a group of Indians, called Hindraf, decided to protest the iniquity that was delivered to them in this country. So, you know, things take a longer time in Malaysia, and you can't just dismiss it outright, right? So, yeah, you give it a bit of a longer timeline, and you will see the effects of it. And you have to remember one thing, that most of the people who are involved this time are very young. They can't wait to vote in the next elections, you know? So that's something to watch out in the next few years.
Now, has the reach and ease of the internet also perhaps had the unfortunate effect of increasing the policing of public opinion, or the ease with which the policing can happen?
Of course. I mean, the police are sophisticated in how they, and the internet police are very sophisticated in how they monitor what we do. And, you know, it helps that you have hashtags, so it's easy to pick out people who discuss this all the time. But the great thing is they then themselves can see the widespread effect of this, the impact of this on the general population, as to whether they are sophisticated enough to analyze it and make a report of it for the powers that be, I'm not too sure. I think at the very least, they are able to pick out the leaders or the influencers who make people pick up the hashtag or do things which are in confluence with the movement that they lead at this point in time.
Jahaba, we just have about a minute left. What would you like to leave us with?
Well, I think the only thing I can draw from what has happened in the last 18 months and this flurry of hashtags this last few weeks is that people are frustrated and they are beginning to come around the idea that they have to take action in their own hands, that they cannot rely on political leaders or any other kind of institutional leaders in the country to give a direction to as to how we solve the issues of the day. The COVID-19 response, the vaccination, the inequity in the country, the economic issues in the country. So they are going about and doing it themselves by way of hashtags, by way of symbolism. And I think in the next 2 years, you will see that if these guys get educated so well and know the issues at hand, we will see a sea change of politicians or leadership in the country in the next general elections. And you know, we saw it once. We saw it in 1982. And I think a lot of us were not born in 82, except me, when Dr. Mahathir actually removed more than half of the Merdeka generation from leadership positions. We're going to see that in the next elections, a lot of the so-called guys who grew up with who Mahathir picked will be out of action. We will have the post-2020 generation coming in. And these are the guys who are adept at hashtags, at symbolism to move the country forward, or at least issues that they hold dear to their heart.
Jahaba, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. That was Jahaba Sadiq, founder of the Malaysian Insight, talking to us about online protests, because that's what the Black Flag campaign was. After this, we're going to be talking about history, about protests here in Malaysia throughout the years. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:50 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We've been spending this hour talking about protests because of the Black Flag campaign that happened over the weekend. And now, you know, we're talking about things happening online on social media, but that doesn't mean that protests haven't been taking place in our country over the decades. And so that's what we wanted to close off on. And for that, we're crossing over to Dr. Ku Ying Hui, who is head of the Department of International and Strategic Studies at the University of Malaya. Ying Hui, thanks for joining us. So to start off, how have protest movements contributed to our democracy over the years?
Well, I think protest movements, or more broadly, sometimes we scholars call it as social movements, are a very important element in any form of democracy in the world, including here in Malaysia. So in short, protest is a means for the people to actually express their dissatisfaction with the situation and to ask for social, political and economic change. So over the years, despite of the different levels of repressions that we face here in Malaysia, protest movements, I must say, have contributed to our journey to democracy. But it must be noted that sometimes it does come with a cost. Nevertheless, it must be also highlighted that the right to protest is very essential in the democracy.
What are some key demonstrations or movements that have shaped Malaysian history?
Yeah, well, demonstrations are not new in Malaysia. So it begins even before we achieve our independence. So for instance, if we look at the back then in 1946, the late Un Jaafar, who is also the UMNO founder, basically at that time, they showed their resistance against the Malayan Union through a very huge rally to protest the loss of the Sultan's political rights. And then there are various others instances, such as the 1947 All Malaya Hartal, which was a nationwide strike that witnessed some parts of our country, where people stopped working for a day to protest against the British. And of course, in 1969, 13 May is the episodes that all of us Malaysians remember, the ethnic riots following the 1969 general election. And in the 70s, we witnessed the emergence of student activism. For instance, many people will remember the episodes of the Baling demonstrations back then in 1974. Later on, 1980s, 1990s, then we also see the unprecedented social challenge to Barisan Nasional with a series of protest mobilizations. So for instance, in 1980s, we see the infamous Operasi Lalang in 1987, and then in the 1990s, we saw the Reformasi movement with Mahathir's controversial dismissal of Anwar Ibrahim at the time. In the more present times now, we see the emergence of electoral reform movement, per se, that everybody's aware with. We also have Hindraf, and now we have different forms of movements and demonstrations, be it whether it is offline or it is online.
And so if we take a look at that, right, holistically and historically speaking, what have been the key triggers leading to protests within Malaysian society?
I think based on the key events that I mentioned earlier on, there are a variety of issues, and generally it is all the grievances either on political, social or economical issues. And very often we will see there is a combination of all as well. But I would like to also make a note here that protests have also domino effect. So some of the key triggers that leading to protests in the Malaysian society can be also related to the protest dynamic around the world. For instance, in 1970s, when we saw the rise of the student activisms, at that point of time, we also see a lot of student activisms are happening around the world. So I think the key triggers that leading to protests in the Malaysian societies can be internal factors as well as the external factors as well.
And looking back at that history of protests, what impact do they have?
Well, I think protests to begin with in the Malaysian society is always, unfortunately, always bring in the negative connotation that, you know, protest is bad and it is not our culture and so forth. But protest is as simple as, you know, to show your grievances towards some things that you're not happy about and you disapprove about and you want to achieve something else, be it at the local level or at the national level. So I think with that, we must see that protests can actually influence the public opinion. I think in our current political situation, we have witnessed some of the U-turn decisions based on public opinions by the people. When people are not happy with something, they either raise it online or they did it offline. But of course, in the COVID times, nowadays, people are moving into the online activisms, and the authorities are also looking at what they talk about in Twitter, social media, such as Facebook and so forth. And I think all the voices here that are being voiced out is a very important elements to be able to actually help to actually either change or to influence the decisions of the authorities if, let's say, the demands are targeted towards the authorities' policies and so forth.
Where would you situate the Black Flag protest in the larger landscape of protests in Malaysian history?
Well, I think in the time of COVID-19, we also witnessed a rise of the protests around the world. And this also including in Malaysia with, you know, over the weekend, we see the Black Flag protests. And we see the move of the landscapes of the protests to the online activisms with the hashtags and so forth in the COVID-19. However, the mixtures of the online and offline activisms has been there even before the COVID-19. But what is really significant from the Black Flag protest is that it has shown the role of the grievances that are being accumulated and how it is being portrayed from the people in the mobilization dynamic in the context of COVID-19, ranging from the political, social and economical challenge that the people are facing now.
And finally, why is it important to maintain a healthy culture of protest and for our laws and an environment to allow it to happen?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to recognize that the right to protest is essential in a democracy. If our governments continue to say that, you know, we are a democratic country. So because this is basically part of the freedom of assemblies that we are talking about as well. So I think what is really needed is to respect the freedom of assembly of the people, and that a conducive environment should be provided for people who want to voice their dissatisfaction in different platforms, be it online or offline. And I think it is important to maintain a healthy protest culture, because protest can actually help to let the authorities understand that their actions could be opposed, and that they should always be reminded that their priority should be to fulfill what they have promised to the people and their responsibility to the people as well. And also that is also when the debate begins and arguments become possible, because I think when you have more discussions and the debates among the people, that's the spirit of the democracy that we are talking about. And that itself is basically a way of how we can say that as a healthy protest culture.
Yinghui, thank you so much for speaking with us. That was Dr. Koo Yinghui, head of the Department of International and Strategic Studies at University of Malaya, talking to us about the history of protests here in our country. And I think really talking about the role that it has historically played in our democracy. So we have spent this hour looking at protests because of the Black Flag campaign that took off over the weekend on social media. We'd like to know, do you think protests are important? What did you make of the campaign if you happen to see it? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. This has been Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.